This is an essay written by my grandmother, Rachel Parmeter, in which she reminisces about an incident from her youth. This essay was submitted as an assignment when she returned to Ohio University in the 1960s. It's titled Rumpus Ridge Fire Department. As I prepared to attend Ohio University last summer, I was reminded of the time in 1923 when I was planning to enter the university for the first time. It was warm for June and the air was very humid. Yuri Taverner and I were packing our trunk for the long journey to Athens, Ohio. We were going by train, but planned to ship our trunk a few days in advance. Just as we finished the last bit of pressing on our choice summer dresses, we noticed black, rolling storm clouds gathering in the southwest, and we heard distant thunder. As we were about to fasten the last leather straps on the trunk, the storm came nearer and the thunder rolled. The jagged flashes of lightning streaked across the sky, and the rain came down in buckets full. In the midst of a loud clap of thunder, we heard a shrill bell ringing. When we came to our senses, we discovered the wooden box telephone in the dining room was ringing continuously. At once, we knew this was the line ring, which meant disaster had come to some neighbor. I rushed to the telephone. Taking the long old-fashioned receiver from the hook, I could hear Aunt Jane, our nearest neighbor, screaming at the top of her voice, "My house is on fire! Come quick!" Yuri and I raced from the house into the downpour of rain to hunt for my father. We shouted and screamed until we finally located him. "Come quick! Aunt Jane's house has been struck by lightning and the house is on fire!" While my father was hurrying from the barn, I couldn't help but think what a small, sprightly woman Aunt Jane was. She was 65 years old and only weighed about 100 pounds, sometimes a little more, or sometimes a little less. Her hair was very gray and also thin on her scalp. Her eyes were brown and beady. She moved as quick as a steel trap. She was always running when she really intended to be walking. Her kindness to everyone was outstanding. She often rode or walked miles to help newborn babies or to be the center of an apple butter making. Yuri raced for the garage and I followed. We climbed into our 1917 model Dodge touring car to wait for my father. He came on the run, but could not get the motor on the car started. We immediately decided to take off our shoes and stockings and to start walking. The road was very muddy, and the sticky red clay oozed up between our toes. When we lifted our feet for another step, each foot would make a snapping, sucking sound like someone cracking chewing gum. This slowed our progress down to a snail's pace. I couldn't help but notice how fast my father was traveling. He was 43 years old and very tall and very slender. His hair was black but was turning gray at the temples. He had been a farmer all his life and consequently was ready for almost any emergency. We finally plodded up to the forks in the road. As we walked down the right fork, we met a gray farm wagon drawn by two mousy mules clopping along a stony road. The driver, dressed in faded blue overalls, offered to come with us. We very gladly accepted his offer. We were now in sight of Aunt Jane's rattling, gray, weather-beaten barn. The door was open and a red cow and a red calf were still in the barn. A wire coop on the outside of the barn furnished very little shelter for a dozen multicolored chickens. At this time, it seemed Mother Nature had unleashed all her fury. The rain was pelting down harder than ever. The lightning seemed sharper and the thunder louder than before. As we came in sight of Aunt Jane's house, we could see a big, black, hairy dog. He was barking anxiously, and as we approached, he growled and the hair on his back stood up. The house looked like most farmhouses in that section of the country. It was in need of a coat of paint, and a few bricks had tumbled down from the top of the chimney. It was a low, one-story type house that sat very close to the road. Encircling the house was a small yard, which was dotted in helter-skelter fashion with many old-fashioned flowers and shrubs. The poppies were in full bloom, and I could see bright orange ones and some white ones in the east corner of the yard. Red and pink peonies were in bud in a row behind the poppies. The purple lilac bush beside the well was sending out perfume through the smoke-scented air. Yellow, blue, and brown pansy faces peeped from over their rock bed near the kitchen door. We could see Aunt Jane carrying her small pieces of furniture from the house into the yard. Smoke was oozing from around the weather-beaten windows, but the lace curtains, white as snow, were gleaming through the spotless windows. From our vantage point, we could not see any blaze, but plenty of gray wood smoke was curling out from under the eaves. Heavy smoke-scented air reached our nostrils. Aunt Jane had buckets by the well, ready to be filled with water, but she had not lowered the bucket on the old-fashioned windlass. My father released the roller of the windlass, and down, down, down lurched the bucket into the bottom of the well. At this moment, two more neighbors arrived, Fred Tavner and Chester Strong. Fred was about 40 years old, 5 feet 8 inches tall, and he was rather on the heavy side. His long black hair was in need of a trimming. He was of Dutch descent, which made him the easygoing type. He was not too fond of work, but when this task presented itself, he was swept along by the excitement. Fred saw the bucket at the bottom of the well, so he began to rewind the squeaking old windlass. By the time the bucket swung back and forth as it was being hauled to the top of the well, it was usually about only 2/3 full. But Fred emptied the water into the empty buckets by the well curb, and the well bucket was lowered again. Chester had tried the handle on the gem pump that was on the cistern. The handle was loose, so Chester proceeded to fix the handle of the pump. While I waited on him to repair the handle, I was thinking what a nice person he really was. He had always been a very religious man. He had been superintendent of the country church in the neighborhood and the master of the local grange. He was about 45 years old and had blonde curly hair, which he kept cut very short. He had been a farmer all his life and was a graduate of the College of Agriculture at Ohio State University. As soon as he succeeded in fixing the pump, both men were soon pumping water as fast as the crude equipment would permit. My father, Yuri, and I started carrying buckets of water to dash out the burning sections of the house. After each one had carried a dozen buckets full of water and thrown them on the fire, my father decided he should see if any sparks had drifted into the barn and ignited the hay mow. He climbed the crude ladder to the hayloft, but he found no fire in the barn. We walked around the house, and a blaze was coming out around the kitchen window. I decided I had better ring the old dinner bell, which was mounted on a pole near the northeast corner of the house. The ringing of the bell could be heard by several neighbors, and this would bring more help. I pulled on the wire that was fastened to the bell, and I gave it about a dozen taps when the wire broke. I raced to the barn to get a piece of baling wire, which was always the farmer's standby. In my excitement, I grabbed a piece of barbed wire, which I knew would never do. I was about to race back empty-handed when I caught my foot on something. It proved to be a piece of baling wire. In my confusion to get back to the bell, I fell over the chicken coop, which is just outside the barn door. I was completely covered with mud, and I was soaked to the skin with water. The fire was still blazing in the kitchen, and Aunt Jane was in there throwing her frying pans out the window. We were only about 2 miles from McConnellsville, which was a thriving little village, but in the storm, no one seemed to be passing our way. We decided to carry more water and pray for help. The glistening blackness of the storm clouds was closing in around us. I knew more rain was coming, which would help keep the fire under control. We carried about 10 more buckets of water, and we were finally rewarded by hearing Aunt Jane say she thought the fire was out. I decided, while things were rather calm, I would look in Aunt Jane's parlor and see if everything was all right. The door was always closed, and it was closed now. I quietly turned the knob, and the door swung around on its creaking hinges. I looked into the parlor, but decided not to go in, as my feet might track mud on the carpet. I could see the horsehair sofa, a black walnut table, and the big chairs with cloth strips to protect them from hair grease. On the wall was Aunt Jane's grandpa's picture, a moose head, and a motto that said, "Home, sweet home." A whatnot had shelves for picture albums, china horses, waxed flowers under glass, and a dried starfish, the three little monkeys, and a pair of beaded moccasins. On a small round stand in the corner of the room was a stereopticon and several pictures for the stereopticon. On the north side of the room was a beautiful mahogany melodeon. I looked everything over carefully and saw the fire had not reached the parlor. I closed the door and walked quickly to the kitchen. As I entered the kitchen, my father said he had better go up into the attic and make sure there wasn't any fire smoldering up there. He hurried up the attic stairs, but was unable to see because there was a large unfinished space, lighted by two small windows on one side of the room. It was too dark to see anything. Aunt Jane had given my father a kerosene lantern, which he now lit and held it high over his head. He could see the fire had not spread to the attic, and he was just turning to leave when his foot hit an object near the stairs. He held the lantern close to the object and discovered an old trunk covered with thick black dust. He proceeded to drag it down the stairs. The attic was above the kitchen, and upon reaching the kitchen floor, he brushed the dust from the lid, which was not locked, and he quickly managed to throw back the heavy lid. The trunk held something, but we were not sure what. It looked like money, tied in bundles. We each took a package out of the trunk, and when we untied them, it was money. Real United States money. Or so we thought. We shook the dust from the $5 and $10 bills, and everyone was planning what he would do with some of it if Aunt Jane gave us part of it. She soon spoiled all the plans by telling us that she had bought the house from Nate Bone, who was a bookbinder. He bound books and had done printing for the businessmen of McConnellsville. He had become a fine printer and had made plates for the printing of counterfeit money. Aunt Jane said for a period of about 10 years, he had passed the counterfeit money without anyone getting suspicious. He thought he was a little too safe and in the year of 1880 was arrested by the FBI. A jury convicted him and he was sent to the Ohio Penitentiary. The only real evidence they found was about a dozen bills he had hid in a desk. They were never able to find the plates with which he did the printing. And here, before our very eyes, on this eventful day, we found more money and the plates. We had taken all the money out of the trunk and packed neatly in one corner were the plates. The date of the money in the trunk was 1860. We all thought the plates and the money should be turned over to the sheriff. Aunt Jane agreed to this, and we helped her to replace it in the old tattered trunk. The excitement was over, the fire was out, and a fortune had just flown out the window. We decided we should wait until Aunt Jane's husband, Elwood, came home. He was working at the Morgan County Fairground, and he had been delayed by the storm. We walked out in the yard to help Aunt Jane carry her pieces of furniture back into the house, and we saw Elwood coming up the road. Aunt Jane said, "He can help me," and since she was a very talkative woman, we knew she wanted to tell her husband all the excitement herself. We walked out into the road. The rain had stopped. One fleecy pink cloud drifted through the blackness, and we knew the storm was subsiding. We'd only gone a short distance when we saw a 1913 Model T Ford coming up the road behind us. As it came along beside us, it stopped, and a voice said, "May I take the Rumpus Ridge Fire Department home?" We all turned quickly to see Forrest Parmeter, who at this time was my boyfriend. We thanked him, but told him he could not drive over our road, which the rain had made too muddy for a car. I was very glad, for I was not exactly presentable at this time.